You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Like some bad movie.
Oh man, here we go.
Here we go. Welcome to the Nightbreed.
Yeah, welcome to Midian.
Hey. Yes, well, welcome to Movie Sucktastic. I'm Scott, that's Joey, and we're reviewing Clive Barker's 1990 cult classic, I guess you would call it, Nightbreed.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember watching this a long time ago. Where is your feed? Where are you? Where is Scott? I don't know. Hold on.
We good?
I'm trying to find you.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm trying to find your video. I saw Nightbreed in the theater.
Oh, with wow.
Scott, yeah, with Scott Zarillo. I don't know if you remember him.
I do.
High school. And I distinctly have the memory of him screaming in my face as we came out of the theater, "Don't you dare tell me that was a bad film."
Wow.
I guess passionate. Even back then I had a reputation, you know?
I guess. Scott, don't you dare tell me this was a bad film.
So I didn't tell him that, but that's kind of how I felt at the time. I wasn't a fan.
Tried to keep the peace.
Well, he threatened me. I mean, geez.
I mean, like, did he mean it, or was it like kind of like half in jest?
I don't know. I'm sure he was joking. I'm been a Clive Barker fan. I was reading the Books of Blood when I was younger than I should have been reading Books of Blood. I read Cabal before seeing this in the theater. Now I read that when I was a teenager, and I never read it since. It's been, you know, what, almost 40 years?
Yeah.
So I don't remember much of the book.
I've never, what was the only thing that I read Clive Barker wrote? It was that, not Nightmares and Dreamscapes. That was King, right?
Yeah, that's King.
Yeah, he wrote a book with a title similar to that or something along those lines. I read that. I think, was that,
I think, was that
short stories? I don't even remember. It's been so long.
I read all the Books of Blood because they were paperback novels at the time. They got, yeah. You know, they were, and, yeah, they're really shitty covers, and I remember reading those, and I read I think the Damnation Game. I stopped reading his stuff when he wrote Imagica because it's just not my cup of tea. More fantasy stuff. I wasn't interested, and so I haven't really followed his later works. But I was deep into horror films at the time. I was deep into Clive Barker. Went to see this in the theater. I was so not interested in it that the comic book came out the same year, I think, and I didn't bother getting it.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so I let's go through the story of Nightbreed.
Yeah. You know, maybe it was Books of Blood that I read, because those are his short stories.
Oh, yeah, they're all short stories. And then there was also The Hellbound Heart, which is the... But I think that was actually in Books of Blood first, so...
Yeah. It's been forever. Forever. All right. Yeah. So the main story about this film is character Boone is played by Craig Sheffer.
Boone.
He His therapist, who just happens to be David Cronenberg, convinces him that he is a bad person, that he's killed people.
Okay, hold on. Let's back that up a bit. When you say he convinces him, it's almost like he says, hey, by the way, you're a serial killer. So, okay.
Yeah, I know. I thought that too. I'm like, wow, that was really easy.
Dude, my psychiatrist tells me I'm a serial killer. I'm getting a second opinion.
I'm getting a new psychiatrist.
Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, they set Boone up as he's got a girlfriend and he's got a psychiatrist. It really rushes right into it because we really want to get to the Nightbreed.
We watched the director's cut, which is 30 yes. minutes longer or 26 minutes longer than the theatrical.
Yes. Well, we both watched the director's cut. I also watched the theatrical cut at 1 hour and 40 minutes, and I watched the Cabal cut, which is 2 hours and 25 minutes long.
Now, the Cabal cut, that is not a fan edit. That is also Clive Barker.
I would consider it it's a composite edit because it uses like work print video footage that's very grainy.
Oh,
and okay. Very hard to hear. To fill in spots. I would consider it. I don't know if Clive Barker was involved in it. That's the only thing. I think he was, but I think he also was at that time in a coma, or just recovering from a coma.
Okay.
So I don't know how involved he was.
This is similar to what they did with Dune. They had that like three and a half hour cut where they used a lot of unused footage and work print stuff, and it was released in Japan, and that was when David Lynch just took his name off the project. He's just Smithied that.
So after we walk through the film, I will touch briefly on the differences between the three versions.
Oh, that sounds great.
I won't go into amazing detail, I'll touch on the basics.
I did take your advice. I did watch the last 15 minutes of the theatrical. So I definitely can comment at least on that.
So, okay.
All right. Yeah.
So I cut you off when Boone was saying, yeah, I must be a serial killer.
Yeah, I must be. Because, you know, Cronenberg, or what's his name? It's Dr. Dick? No, Dr. Philip Decker.
Deckard.
Yeah. So he basically... So at this point, you don't know that Dr. Philip or Dr. Decker is a serial killer, but you got a pretty good idea that there's something wrong with him, that he is a serial killer.
It's Cronenberg.
Yeah.
There's something wrong with him.
You know, because before that scene happens, it shows him like going into someone's house and killing them. And then he talks to Boone and he's like, listen, you are a serial killer. Everything that you've told me in our meetings is exactly what's in these photos. It's like, this is you. And it's like, okay. Clearly he's just recreating what they talked about to frame him for it.
Right.
But so he convinces him, and then he goes to Midian.
Decker says you got 24 hours to turn yourself in, and here's some lithium, which he actually instead slips some like hallucinogenics, which I think is a real dick move. I don't know what the purpose of that was. If he's trying to frame the guy and wants to turn himself in, why is he going to send him on an acid trip? Right. But then, and then while he's in the hospital, he bumps into Narcisse, the actor, who's also trying to get to Midian, and that's how he finds out where Midian is.
Exactly. He starts ripping his own face off.
Yeah, my favorite character.
I love a coward. I mean, like, he has some great lines in this. You know,
great delivery. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why in the director's cut, I like his his storyline in the theatrical, only because I don't like what Cronenberg does to him in the director's cut.
Yeah.
You know, because
let's not get ahead of ourselves.
No, we won't. We won't.
But so Boone rushes off to Midian, leaves his girlfriend behind and everything. And finds the Nightbreed, who are not receptive to him at all, and they bite him, and then
the cop and Decker show up, and the two Nightbreed that find him were, let's see, Pelequin and Kinski.
Yeah, the Moon Knight guy, right. And the Tentacle Head guy.
Right. And the Moon Head guy, which is Kinski, basically says, we can't do anything to him. That's the law. And Pelequin's like, fuck the law. You know,
it is ape law.
And he's like, you are meat. You know, they refer to people who aren't Nightbreed as naturals.
Yeah.
Well, so that's what they do. So
I know.
He basically calls him meat. He wants meat. So he bites him and then runs off. But because he is bitten by Nightbreed, when he dies, he can become Nightbreed.
And we'll talk about that later.
Sure.
Now, one of my favorite scenes, of course, is when he runs out of Midian again, bitten. He runs into the cops and Decker, and Decker kind of walks up to him like he's trying to talk to him. And then he's like, he's got a gun.
And then they just start unloading everything into him.
I remember loving that line in the theater. It's just beautiful. And Cronenberg, I gotta say real quick, Cronenberg is a delight in this film. And
it's a very large part.
Yeah, well, they tried to make the film more of a slasher, so they put a lot more in with him.
Well, here's the thing. Up until this movie, Cronenberg, you know, he did little things here and there, you know, mm-hmm. 5-minute part, almost like cameo-esque stuff. But this was a real part with real lines, and he was in the entire film.
Yeah.
You know, he was a plot point. It wasn't just like he was, you know, doing a walk-on.
No, definitely.
And I think that's why Cronenberg really, that and the fact that he's always liked Clive Barker, that I think that's why Cronenberg was attracted to do this.
Oh, yeah. It's just right up his alley.
Yeah.
Definitely.
For sure.
Yeah. So, like you said, Boone comes back from the grave and dives through the window of the only morgue on the 20th floor of a building.
I know.
When have you ever seen a morgue with a window? What the fuck?
That's what you're nitpicking?
It bothered me. I'm sorry.
It clearly bothered you.
So yeah, so he returns to Midian where they have a little ceremony and welcome him to the club, and then his girlfriend follows.
We're all happy when he joins.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But then his girlfriend follows behind because she wants to know what's going on. So she goes where he was killed because somehow that's going to help her. And Deckard follows her because he's crazy.
Crazy.
Deckard's motivation, I totally believe throughout this entire film.
Yeah.
It's just like, I hate the breeders. And then we found these things. I gotta stop those. It's like, this makes perfect sense. This guy's following a clear path. He's agenda oriented. I totally get this character.
Yeah.
Unlike another character that's coming up.
Okay.
So what happens to that? So yeah, Decker goes after Laurie. The Midian people are like, you can't save her. Boone's like, but I'm gonna. And then he saves her from Decker. But Decker gets away. So Decker calls in the police. So he like a local sheriff guy, and they're all gung ho to find the cannibal killer.
Yeah.
And that, I don't know where cannibal ever came up. It's just like they started calling him cannibal. And later on during the press conference, he said, like, they ask him, so what's the evidence he's a cannibal? And he says, they found there were human remains in his system. And it's like, when? And how?
And how are they testing?
Did you find that? Human?
The dude ain't taking a dump and he ain't peeing because he's dead. Like none of that is happening.
Yeah, this is no. That's why the cannibal thing. I don't know, but so Decker recruits all the normals, which is the police force and the drunk priest, just because.
Why not?
And they form like a little militia to go hunt down the serial killer, which totally reminds me of, I think, Halloween 4, when all the drunk guys get together to find Michael Myers, and they end up killing one of their own in the bushes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, Halloween 4 came out before this film. Didn't it?
I don't know if that's the one. I don't know which one. I think it was 4. It could have been 5 or those all blur for me.
Okay.
I don't know, but I think it was 4.
Yeah, this one came out in 1990. This come out like around Halloween, or was this? Sometimes they throw horror movies in the summer lineups.
Oh, I didn't look up the release date. I'm gonna look at it
right now. No, February. It's a weird date movie.
Yeah, it is.
But came out February 1990. Mm-hmm. What were they thinking with that? February.
Yeah, I don't know if they had too much faith in the film. To be honest, I'm surprised it wasn't a January release.
Not with Clive Barker's other films.
I'm saying with Clive Barker's name on it is the only reason it got into February.
Probably.
But I don't think they had. I mean, they didn't have enough faith in it where they took it from him and like did additional scenes. You know, they did that's why we have the director's cut. Yeah. So,
$11 million budget made $16 million. Yeah. So, I mean, it at least was in the green.
Hmm.
So this
is when the big. The big battle, like the whole third act, is pretty much the big Midian battle, the normals versus the monsters.
Yeah. You know, I wish, you know, because again, I haven't seen this in a really long time. I wish they did more with the Nightbreed.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you got to see different characters, but you didn't really get to see a lot of what they did and them fighting back. It was just a lot of them trying to either escape or not die, you know, like it'd be infiltrated in Midian. I wish there was more of them. More on screen time of them and what they could do and interactions. There was very little of that.
I think a lot of that had to do with part of it was a lot of the makeup was not practical enough to have the people actually like talking and acting in it.
I guess so, yeah.
I think that's one of the negatives of having an artist as a film director and writer. Is that he's writing with an artist's eye and he knows like the images he wants to see, but those images aren't really conducive to having that person like talk in a scene or move around. There are so many creatures, you know, like the guy with the head like halfway down his body. There's nothing you can do with that except just show him, and then it's a showpiece.
A movie like this, I think, would benefit from a remake or a sequel. In today's, if you got maybe Guillermo del Toro.
Dude, you know, I was just going to say that. I was just going to say Guillermo. You read my mind.
I mean, he's amazing with monsters. So it just, if he were to remake this or make even just a sequel, I think Guillermo would do it justice and do what I think we want.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that'll ever happen. I'd love to see it, to be completely honest. I really would. This is a cult classic. Whether people like it or not, this is a cult classic.
It is. And I'm still not a fan, though.
Well,
I have to be honest. The film's clunky.
It's clunky. It's clunky, but I remember when I was a kid and I watched this. What was I, 14 when I saw this? I remember back then thinking it was an okay film, and in rewatching it, while I can see its flaws, I can see how it's clunky. There was a lot more that I liked from this film than disliked.
Oh, I will say there's stuff I appreciated now that I don't know I did at the time.
Yeah.
The whole underground set with the rope bridges and everything.
Right.
Spectacular set. Beautiful set. All the interior Nightbreed sets of I thought they did a lot with it. I thought it was interesting. Yeah. I thought the graveyard set was atrocious.
Well, it was a lot of green screen and matte paintings in that.
Yeah, you know. Which didn't work well. And
it's also 36 years ago. It's a tougher time to be doing that, especially because stop motion was really still being used. You know, Total Recall that summer came out. It was just a lot of stop motion. It wasn't until the following year till we got like the CGI boom with Terminator 2.
Well, the director's cut has those two brief stop motion sequences, the one with the bird-like thing eating something, and the other one with the cheetah riding something. Cheetah woman.
Yeah.
Now, the Cabal cut uses that cheetah woman footage. There's more of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's not good.
Oh.
Yeah, and it's not good in the director's cut either. That's why you show it so briefly. Oh, but wow. Okay. That's one thing I was like, that was a worthy cut for the theatrical, in my opinion, was getting rid of that shoddy stop motion. I appreciate the effort, but it didn't work.
John Carpenter did the same thing with The Thing. They did a whole bunch of stop motion stop motion, and they got rid of like 99% of it. There's only, I think, one shot near the end that they kept a stop motion shot. They kept it because it worked, and that was it.
And that's the weird thing about the Nightbreed variations, the different cuts of the film. Back in the 80s and 90s, a lot of the time that you got a horror film with a director's cut, it was because it was in the 80s and 90s, and the MPAA was cracking down on horror films, and so all the gore and the violence and all the really cool scenes got cut out of the film. And so that's what you went for the director's cut for. With Nightbreed, all the cuts
were right.
Well, I would say the vast majority were right. Yeah.
Yeah.
But all of the cuts were like narrative, structural. They're not, none of it was, except for like the few stop motion sequences that didn't work. And like there may be a couple more monsters like briefly shown in the Cabal cut, just because they probably trimmed a bit for time, but like they didn't cut any gore or violence or anything of that nature from this. It's all subjectively about the narrative. I've seen people say that the Cabal cut or the director's cut give the film room to breathe, give the story room to breathe. Okay. I don't believe that, but that seems to be an opinion going around.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
Well, I mean,
I shouldn't start off like that. Sorry.
What are you giving this film to breathe for? I mean, it is what it is.
Well,
are they just trying to be forgiving of some scenes or
well, I'll tell you,
plot structure?
I'll tell you real quick for the director's cut here, the scenes that are in there that aren't in the theatrical cut. It's there's a scene of Boone getting out of the shower and getting a call from Decker, and Decker telling him to come over. Completely useless. Don't need it.
Right.
There's a scene of Boone at work. Don't care. There's a scene of Boone burning his belongings on an acid trip and going to Lisa's nightclub where she's performing. Don't need it. there's a scene after Boone disappears from he launches through the window of that high rise mortuary. There's a scene where the cops and Lisa come in and find him gone and find the broken window. Totally unnecessary. There's two scenes that do work. One is when Lisa meets that girl at the bar in the bathroom. There's a scene of them talking later.
You mean Lori?
That scene works.
Her name is Lori.
Lori, sorry. She's such an inconsequential character. I really don't. But when Lori meets the girl in the bathroom, there's a scene of them talking later that kind of sets up that Decker's the
money
boyfriend,
or men.
But not really.
Why are you crying? Money or men?
Yeah.
That's what I cry about whenever it's one of those two.
Not bad dialogue in that scene. No. I didn't mind that. But the drunk girl talk, that scene I think is okay. And then they actually show the press conference the sheriff goes to before he comes back in and bitches out Decker about Boone
not
being dead.
A pulse.
Yeah, so they actually showed the press conference. I was like, I liked. That was okay. That kind of made sense to me. Then there's the new scene where they show the militia forming and they're like showing them weapons that they have and stuff. Totally useless and it's campy as shit. But I liked
it. Show that one sheriff, just like a skinny little nerdy guy, and it's just like, wow, this guy is like the serial killer himself.
He had like rot rubbing it on his lips.
Yeah, he's like, they're trusty. It's like, are you cutting cheese with that or ripping people's heads off?
Yeah, beyond that, during the Midian raid, there's just some scenes that are longer and some shorter, but then there's a major difference of how both films end. They actually reshot a different ending for the theatrical cut, which is...
So was the director's cut the original ending always? And they reshot for the theatrical because it didn't test well?
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Or I don't know if it didn't test well or just the studio didn't like it.
Okay.
But that was the reason for that. Now, the Cabal cut, again, a lot of it is they replace a lot of scenes and add additional dialogue during, like, when Laurie saves Babette from the sun.
Oh, right.
Or when she's being interrogated, that scene is much longer with the two detectives, Detective Joyce and Decker, and not the two detectives, with Detective Joyce and Decker. And there's like they just extend all these scenes that don't really do much in Cabal, in my opinion. It ends the one thing I find very interesting is that Cabal ends the way that the director's cut ends, except a bit more schmaltzy, if that's possible.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah, but after the credits, they use the Decker ending from the theatrical as an end credit sequence.
Okay,
which I thought was very interesting. Like they liked it enough that they kept it, even though it was like not the ending that they wanted.
Because I bet they were hoping for a sequel of some kind.
And
that sets it up.
And that's the interesting thing too, to look at this film and I mean. Why does Hellraiser have like a dozen sequels and Nightbreed doesn't have one?
It's interesting.
I guess it's
because the studios felt that Hellraiser was a stronger IP, maybe? I don't know.
It's interesting to look at.
It is. Because
I personally,
you would think this movie would have gotten at least one sequel.
Yeah, I don't know how well it was received, and I personally think there's a weakness to the film, and I think parts of it are poorly written. I'm not criticizing Clive Barker as a writer. I'm criticizing him as a screenwriter directing his own work. That's all.
Yeah.
I think some of the lines are so ham-fisted, like the that's what you envy. You also destroy. Maybe they just hate. Maybe people can just hate without you turning it into they're just jealous of you, son. What is this nonsense? I have a really strong reaction to that because it's lazy. It's lazy and easy. And I feel like this kind of contrast between, like, I get the idea of making the monsters the good guys and humans the bad guys. I get that. I'm okay with that, you know.
Right.
But they make the naturals, the people, so comically inept that it's not a real challenge at all. The chips are stacked in the favor of the Nightbreed from the beginning. Just from like a morality standpoint, like there's never a point where you're like, oh, gee, I wonder who's right. No, of course not. And then like in the director's cut or the Cabal cut? It's Cabal cut. There's an additional scene of Detective Joyce, the only black character in the film, by the way.
Right.
And the character who becomes sympathetic with the Nightbreed, more so in the Cabal cut. He actually lives in the Cabal cut.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. But, what was I getting at with that?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's a scene after they kill the dog boy where he's trying to convince one of the cops that maybe they're overreacting, and the cops, and he's like, maybe they're just different. And the cop says, isn't that enough? And I'm like, this And like this is so ham-fisted, just pushing like that. Like you got the one black character. Maybe they're just different. Hint. You know, I just no. Yeah, we got it. We fucking got it, Clive. So I feel like the writing is weak in some spots. I appreciate the artistic vision of the film. I think that's what a lot of people are drawn to, and I think that's the film's strong point is the artistic vision of the creatures themselves.
There's a lot of that, yes.
But it's the film's not meant to be examined closely. It's a fable. It's an adult fairy tale.
Yeah.
It's because like the whole idea of this is where only monsters go and they'll reject you if you're not a monster unless they bite you, then they have to take you in. So it's a communicable disease now? I know that the Nightbreed is a metaphor for homosexuality.
Yeah, that's I've heard that. I guess I can see that.
It's pretty blatant, especially in the book. I feel
okay.
And I'm not against that metaphor. I think it's a lazy metaphor. And I also like in the 90s. I feel like if you're making something about the homosexual plight or situation, you don't need a new metaphor. They had gay people in films. You know, even though Boone looks like someone picked him up on the street corner. Like, talk about like a gay centerfold. He looks like he walked right out of a Kenneth Anger film.
Jeans and t-shirt.
And the leather, don't forget the leather jacket. Have the leather jacket. Fucking Jesus. But like the priest, the priest character confounds me. For me, the priest is written by someone who hates religion but doesn't really understand it. Or at least understand like a certain dynamics of it. It's such a, again, ham-fisted is the word I have to use. Let's put the drunken priest. And the priest, like, in like the course of half an hour, like, he switches sides like three times.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
He doesn't really feel like he has any real motivation to himself. He almost feels like a puppet in this film. It's not a character that I in the book I feel like there was more to it. I don't remember. I wish I had reread it, but I don't have a copy.
I think it goes back to my original thought. It's just that there's a lot of these characters aren't fleshed out enough. I want to see more of the Nightbreed. I want to see more interaction with them. It just felt like there was a little bit left to be desired.
That's kind of how I felt when I finally got around to seeing Freaks, the Todd Browning Freaks, because I'd always read so much about, he loved the people and he wanted to show that there was more to them than just being circus freaks, because he grew up in a circus, or he ran away from the circus, so he knew freaks and stuff on sideshows. But when I watched the film, it's like I felt like all they, for the vast majority of them, all they did was do their little freak trick that they would do on the sideshow, and then they were in the background while they had just had the midgets do all the acting. I was like, yeah, I want to see more of the freaks.
So you're talking about what was that, the 1930s movie? Yeah. Freaks. Okay.
Yeah, the Todd Browning one. Yeah. Okay. So I always felt I had the same reaction that you did with the Nightbreed. It was like, I want to see more of the freaks. I want to see more of the monsters.
Yeah, and I
want to see more of their interactions. I need more than just going up to the camera and going, ah, ah.
I know, 100%. Exactly. It's how I felt. I wanted more.
I praise the set design. I praise the special effects, the practical special effects, makeup. This film really like went all out with all that. I'm surprised they did as much as they did for the budget they had. But I just you got to forgive. You got to forgive some flaws.
Yeah.
That's all. Yeah. That's all I have to say.
I agree. So, the difference between the theatrical cut and the director's cut, at least from what I could see, is the ending is totally different. Mm-hmm. The ending in the director's cut has him turning Lori so that they could be together. And it just basically says that he has to, to rebuild Midian, because the prophecy says that it's going to get destroyed. So it has this panning shot of the two of them together in eternity, and it pans out, and then it fades to black and credits, right?
I've read so many reviews of people that agree with me and are like, I hate that ending.
Yeah.
This is that cheesy shot of them, that romance novel picture of them on the top of the hill with the sun coming up or whatever.
We haven't talked about it yet. Danny Elfman did the score for this, and the fingerprints are all over this music score-wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
The score is excellent because Danny Elfman is excellent. He just is. So then the theatrical cut ends with him also becoming Cabal and, you know, having to rebuild, except Narcisse, which is the guy that rips his face off, is alive in the theatrical, but he's beheaded in the director's cut, which I hate.
And the Cabal cut. The Cabal cut.
I hate that.
Yeah, I don't like it. I think it's my favorite character.
Yeah,
I like the theatrical. I personally like the theatrical version better than the director's cut.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm going to have both. I'm going to keep both. It was interesting. My son, I came home and he's watching Blade Runner and he's watching the theatrical cut, and I knew it immediately because Harrison Ford is narrating the film. And I'm like, are you watching the theatrical cut? He's like, yeah, why? And I'm like, you should be watching the director's cut. He's like, wait, what? I go, don't watch the theatrical. So I actually turned that off. I loaded up the director's cut to the same point of where he was in the film. And I go, you can finish the rest of this film the right way. I mean, I don't hate the theatrical cut for Blade Runner. I find it fascinating because it is two different takes of the film. Mm-hmm. It's more like a noir style in the theatrical because Harrison Ford is narrating. It's like, yeah, she was on my mind. You know, I'm trying to eat some noodles. It's like, all right, I get it. The director's is a much stronger edit of that. So, and in this case, it's the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, I usually like director's cuts when they like restore a subplot or something. But all I really felt that the director's cut did was just extend. I mean, they had more scenes in it, but it was all just an extension of the same thing, and it was just I guess sending more time. They needed more time to set up Boone because the fact that they weren't willing to take time to set up Boone, it just throws the whole film off for me. I think in the director's cut, they rush into Boone like being like, oh yeah, I'm a serial killer. Okay. Make it make sense. And I hate that phrase now because I've heard idiot people use it. But I mean,
yeah, it's part of meme culture at this point.
I apologize for saying it, but that's, I mean, okay. You know, give me more of a reason to understand why this guy would believe he killed 15 people other than, like, you just said so.
Well, I mean...
I hate to harp on it, but that just really throws me... Although, Cronenberg, my favorite thing from the documentaries, the guy that played Boone, said, like, the best thing about Cronenberg was he didn't even try to act. He just, like, said his lines.
Yeah, apparently that's how he acts.
Yeah, I know, and it works because he's just naturally creepy. That soft-spoken, silent, like, oh, yeah, that was, yeah. No, you killed 15 people, I'm telling you so. Yes, you should turn. I probably would turn myself in if he told me that. He's got that mesmeric voice. But,
yeah, for sure.
They ruin his character in the Cabal cut. There's a scene where the mask is talking to him.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, I was like, oh, we didn't need that shit. You know, now you're just now we're just reaching. Okay.
So I always thought, excuse me.
Yes.
I always thought that my wife had seen this film and really enjoyed it. So I told her, I said, oh, I have to watch Nightbreed. She goes, oh, cool, I'll watch that. And I was like, in my head, she said that because, oh, she really liked this film. Then we started watching it. She goes, I've never seen this movie before. You know? So, what? No! Because I'm in the middle of a podcast.
Oh, boy.
Is it important? It depends?
Yeah.
On what?
I busted my lip.
You busted your lip?
Yeah.
How?
So, at the game, I kind of went down to the bottom
down. And I kind of smashed it. Okay,
I'll be out in 10 minutes. Yes.
No.
Well, now so he's talking. Now he's talking to me through the door. Did you see the Odyssey trailer? Like, what did your lips split open? I mean, I picked you. Oh my God! All right.
Maybe he's a Nightbreed.
Maybe. I mean, plays video games with the lights completely out. He's the only one in our family that doesn't wear glasses. I go, if you want to keep it that way, turn the fucking light on.
All right. What do you want to
know? Well, it's currently what? It's actually pretty high. It's a 6.5. I think this is a 6. I would go 6 on this.
Yeah, I've got it at 5 on the letterbox, but that's like the rating I gave it like
what?
Before we watched it.
Oh my fucking God. I mean,
did you buy them?
Yes. They're in your room. Like 2 weeks ago. I apologize to all of our listeners right now. This is what it's like having teenagers. I said I'll be out in 10 minutes. I'm in the middle of a podcast.
On the letterbox, I put it at 5, but I did that before I rewatched it. So I think I agree with you. I think a 6 is where it belongs.
No, I think it's absolutely.
It's a little above average, but it really it is above some more average, polishing even with to get to a 7.
Yeah, with all of its flaws, it's still above average. This deserves a 6.
I agree.
All right. Perfect. So now, are we going to spin the wheel?
I think so.
Yeah. Let me see. Where is the wheel? Ooh, there is the wheel. Ooh. Very nice. So, obviously, you know what's interesting? So I went to the wheel, and I always shuffle it. And at the very top, I never noticed this before, one of the choices is Scott's choice. So I scrolled through, and there's also a Joey's choice.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know that until today because I am completely unprepared if it ever fell on that. Like, I never have anything. I think I'm going to have to, I mean, I hope it doesn't fall on it tonight because I'm going to have to veto it because I am not prepared. So what I think I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to put together a list if it ever falls on that so I have something. Like, I probably could pull something out of my ass and have us watch, to be completely honest. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I never noticed that those were options in there. So I thought that's kind of cool. I like that. All right. Are we ready for our first spin?
I'm ready, sir.
All right. So the way it works is we each get a veto. So if Scott vetoes something and then I veto something on the third spin, if we also don't like that, we have to choose between the three that we spun for. One of those three has to be chosen. Those are the new rules. So here comes the first spin. Here we go. It's like a lot of this music is like almost spa type music. Have you gone back and listened to some of these on our episodes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. I watch that afterwards.
Oh, okay. So this is My Father, the Hero. Is that the one with Gerard Depardieu and a very young what's her face? What's her name? Shit. She was in like Knocked Up with Seth Rogen, and I'm pretty sure that's her.
Yeah. It's where the father helps his underage daughter date.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, very Catherine Heigl. Film. Catherine Heigl. It's a very, very, very young Katherine Heigl, like we're talking like 14 years old.
Yeah, that they play up as a sex, as a, for sexiness.
Well, there's a scene in that, there's a scene in that movie where she takes off like a towel and she's at the poolside and it's like total thong.
Yeah.
Like upper
crack
thong.
Horrible.
I don't want to watch this. Sorry.
So you're vetoing it?
Yes, I am. I mean, okay. Unless you want to veto it, give me a veto. No. All right.
After you.
We're going to spin one more time here. See, like, this music is like the canned music you find on, like, DIY videos. Or DIY videos, I mean. Ah, fucking Pet Sematary franchise.
I've never seen part two.
Me neither. But did we review part one? Because if we didn't, we have to start there.
No, we don't.
Yeah, we do.
No.
Don't we? Now, I know I used a veto, but I don't want to watch this either.
I'm going to veto this one, and let's see what the third pick is.
Okay. All right, one more. Now, this is like just fucking circus music. I mean, it's just fucking hilarious. All right, come on. Something good. Watch Me When I Kill. And it had a tiger sound.
Watch Me When I Kill.
What is this? This got to be. Hold on. This got to be 70s. It's got to be 70s or it screams like early
80s. 1977.
All right.
Yeah, here we go. A pharmacist is murdered and a woman happens to see the culprit leave the scene. That's as far as I'm going to go. It looks like Antonio Bito. So this might be Giallo. This might be a Giallo film.
Yeah, it looks like it's. There's so many names with vowels in it.
But it's definitely an Italian horror film. So this is nice. We can add this to the. We've done a few. We've done some Argento films. We did a Death Laid an Egg. We're hip.
Pasquale Fronte, Giovanni Bozzi. I've got to read some more of these now. Pasquale Ferranti's wife.
Giuseppe
Peretti.
Jesse Adabati. Adabati?
Esmeralda Massori.
Yeah, this is going to be real Italian.
Some of my relatives are in here. Our people. Let's see. That's actually, there aren't a lot of people in this film.
That's a good sign.
I mean, the cast, as far as the cast, it's, what is it? It's 1, 2, 3.
Well, it's only an hour and a half. There should be a walk in the park.
It's only a cast of like 17 people.
Yeah, we're going with this. I feel strongly about this one. This is a good pick.
Fernando Cerulli.
And I have this on the Plex in case you don't have it.
Giuseppe Arrobati. Gianfranco Bullo. I'm like really going all in, man. Bianca Toccafondi. It's like Rayuno up in this shit. If anyone doesn't know what Rayuno is, it's an Italian TV station. Anyway. My father watches it. It's so funny. I walk in there. One, it's blasting because my father's 87 and his hearing is starting to go. And two, it's mainly just Italian talk shows, Italian cooking shows, and the news. That's all in Italian. There's not a word of English is spoken. And they all sound like that. Aldo Sarello. Corandi Panni. Okay, I got it. All right, I'm done. All right, let's end this fucking thing.
All right.
My pronunciation is pretty fucking good, though. I will say that.
No, I think you're spot on. I wouldn't know, but it sounds good.
You wouldn't know. You know. Don't worry. Anyway. All right. Okay, this is episode, 476. We're heading towards that 500.
Oh, yeah.
Should be somewhere around 500. Probably somewhere around Halloween, I think.
Maybe. That'd be cool.
Well, I mean, you know, with vacations and things like that, and the fact that you make no money doing this, so it is what it is. Episode 476. Go to our website, please, and just hang out there. I think you'll enjoy it. We've been working on that for a while now, and we updated.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can listen to the show there. You can download the show there. You can click on the YouTube link right from there, and it'll take you to the YouTube page for Movie Sucktastic, where you can watch all of the videos, including this one where we just reviewed Nightbreed. You can go to iTunes and you can listen to the show there as well. You can go to facebook.com/moviesucktastic. You see everything that we're posting there. You can also go to Scott's Letterboxd site at letterboxd.com/moviesucktastic. You can also leave us voicemail at 908-514-4470. If you want to leave us email, please do so. We'll read it on the show. The email address is themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. If you want to download our podcast player, it's moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk, which is mostly working. What's the most important thing is that's an old app that made that. A lot of things are broken, but you know what isn't broken? The podcast episodes, they all work. So you can listen to everything. It's how I listen to it in my car. It's phenomenal. Or you can just download your favorite podcast player for your Android or your iPhone. Whatever you want, just do a search for Movie Sucktastic and every single episode is there. We are also on streaming sites like Amazon. We are on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, which is now owned by SiriusXM. And the biggie, we are on Spotify now. So
look out, Joe Rogan.
Yeah, okay. but you can pretty much hear us everywhere. Oh, and I'm in the process of trying to figure out how to get us on Netflix, because apparently they do podcasts now too. So that's what I
do. That, anyway. We'll start reviewing Netflix films.
Well, if they let us in, they're smart. They'll let us in. So
I don't know. I don't know if they want us reviewing their films though.
Anything is good publicity. Anyhow.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
All right. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
I love a coward.
That's my favorite line. All right, everybody. Wait, oh, here we go.
I got some words of wisdom.
You do?
Nixon 5. I got some words of wisdom. Nixon 5.
Nixon 5? Yep. Second round?
Yep.
Yeah? All right.
Let's go next.
Uncle Scott has no idea what you're talking about.
New York Knicks basketball team.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
No idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. I
had no idea this basketball season started, ended, or playoffs have begun. And you know what? He's a better man for it.
Why?
Don't have to. Why? He doesn't have to deal with the stress of the playoffs and worrying about if your team's winning. And you know what? You know what you just did? Our fade out music is now over.
Oh.
You're welcome.
Yeah, we.
You're
missed.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Yep.
Anyway.
Nixon 5.
All right, everyone. We'll talk to you next week when we review. What was it? When hold on.
Watch me when I kill.
Look at this
watch
kid.
Watch me when I kill.
Look at this kid. He knew it. Watch me when I kill. Look at that. Watch me when I killed. Yeah, 1977. All right, everybody. See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.